Content warning, this episode of Ex-Tumblr Girls includes mentions of some pretty intense topics, including but not limited to eating disorders and pedophilia in the context of the book Lolita. It is broken up into sections though, so listen with your own discretion.
Hello and welcome to Ex-Tumblr Girls, a podcast hosted by two ex-Tumblr girls turned modern Tumblr women. I'm your host, Tori.
I'm your host, Carly.
Let's talk about Tumblr. Welcome to a very special episode of Ex-Tumblr Girls. If you are a frequent listener, you will know that we have been not so subtly hinting at a special incoming project for some time now, and it is finally here. So this project is in collaboration with one of our awesome listeners, Kat. Kat reached out to us a couple months ago and asked if we would make a collaboration episode as part of her art curation thesis. Her exhibition is titled Hell is a Teenage Girl, and it's an exploration of girlhood in the digital era, specifically on Tumblr. And as you know, that is precisely what our podcast is about. So we're really excited to be part of this. But today, instead of talking about 2014 Tumblr, like we usually do, we're going to be talking about modern day Tumblr, as it is unfortunately not so different from back then.
Yeah.
Introducing to you, girl blogging.
So if you don't know what a girl blogger is, it is a new trend, I guess, on Tumblr. And it's, I don't know really when it came about, maybe in the past few years.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
But just the way that Tumblr communities work, it's kind of like a ton of tags that just get thrown onto every post. And so some of those tags are nymphit, coquette, dollet, waif, femcel, female manipulator. I think those are like the big ones. And there's pretty rigid aesthetic associated with it. There's overlap and there's some that don't really fit completely with one another. But just to make things simpler for us, we're just going to kind of talk about it all as one trend.
Yeah. These communities are very overlapping between the coquette aesthetic and the nymphet community and the girl bloggers and the femcels. They're all unique-ish from each other, but they share a lot of aesthetic and thematic similarities. Yeah.
I think that the Tumblr users that identify as a girl blogger, or like that's what their blog's aesthetic is, they usually have bits of like nymphet, which is like the Lolita style, and maybe a bit of female manipulator, but there's overlap, and we're not going to get into the specifics of each community because that'll take us like 4 years to talk about. But the aesthetic that we're going to be talking about as a whole is super feminine. It's generally white women as well, and also pretty heterosexual. So some of the main tropes that you see on girl blogging accounts are like heroin chic, which is very 90s and not very new at all. I would say it was popular on 2014 Tumblr, and now it's been revived. Same thing with the schoolgirl aesthetic, which kind of gets morphed into Lolita a little bit. Russian ballerina, New York socialite imagery, and all of these aesthetics are really centered around skinny, white, and rich girls, but also a little edgy, which is, you know, very 2014. I think all of us are pretty familiar with this type of aesthetic.
Yeah, if you were on 2014 Tumblr, this is all going to sound really familiar, and that's because it is. But it's kind of like a new generation of Tumblr girls. Instead of calling themselves Tumblr girls, they're girl bloggers.
Yeah. And you would think that they would be a little bit more self-aware, but honestly, I don't see it. I think that
there's a really strange theme of being self-aware and also not at all on yeah. these posts, which we will really dive into in one of our three main thematic sections. But we're not there just yet. You have to wait yeah. in here.
Yeah. But I think really the girl blogging space just has no – it's not a space for LGBT women or gender nonconforming women. It's so feminine. And just the pieces of media that are referenced on these blogs just kind of solidify who the audience is really for. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't say that all the girl blogging accounts are skinny, white, rich women. I mean, statistically, that's probably not true. But yeah. that is the imagery that it is a part of these blogs. So take that as you will.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the like aspirational image that this community centers around, whether or not that is or ever will be a reality for the individual girl blogger.
Yeah. And I think that that might be what people are self-aware of, but they're not mm-hmm. self-aware enough to actually center their aesthetic around anything else. They just love these like random movies too much. That we'll go into it a little bit. So one thing that kind of sets apart the girl blogger from maybe like a just visual aesthetic is the tone that the posts are kind of made in. So we have this quote. This quote is from an article called Intimacy and the Machine Slouching Towards Girl Blogging. It's on variousartists.com.
What a title.
Yeah. So the quote is, "This diary voice, psychologically charged and often bitchy like the writing on a bathroom stall, is what separates the girl blogger from an impersonal mood boarder with a similar taste for girly things."
Yeah. So even if you've encountered girl blogging imagery on your Tumblr or even Pinterest, I see a lot of it.
Yeah, it's huge on Pinterest.
It's not always necessarily girl blogging. So girl blogging imagery and girl blogging are kind of like a Venn diagram.
Yeah.
And it's a really specific subset of blogs that are only dedicated to girl blogging imagery and also girl blogging narrative.
Yeah. What I usually see, like when I was doing research for this episode and looking into girl bloggers on Tumblr, it's usually like they're the whisper memes. Mm-hmm. So it's like an image of like a Victoria's Secret angel with text that's like, "I hate my life." That's the basic yeah. vibe.
We have actually posted some of these memes on our Instagram for yeah. International Women's Day.
You know, we got to take what we can get. It sucks because when I'm on Tumblr, like I'll see some posts that like I find relatable and I'm like, that's funny. I want to reblog it. And then I go to the source and it's like the tags are like girl blogging, waif, nymphit. I'm like, oh, fuck. I guess I'm indoctrinated now.
Yeah. They just make such relatable memes about hating men. But we'll get there.
We'll get there. So, yeah, I would say that the girl blogger is what some people call a pseudo-ironic social media-born persona. I think that's probably, like, the perfect way to define what category girl blogging sits into, because it really is not just a visual aesthetic. Aparajita Bhandari of Cornell University and Sarah Bimo of York University suggest that people produce online identities by engaging with through varied and multidimensional practices such as identification, indexicality – don't know what that word means.
Neither do
I. The visual media objects created and posted by others in their network.
So it's safe to say that oddly, this hyper-individualistic, self-referential, but still unaware is like very community-based. It's kind yeah. of like a suffering together kind of thing. And I don't just blog about these things. I am a girl blogger.
Yeah. I do wonder, because when I was looking on Tumblr, I couldn't really tell if there were actual communities, like maybe what we remember from 2014 mm-hmm. Tumblr when we were in like the Teen Wolf and Supernatural communities where we actually had like internet friends and like converse with people. I couldn't really see any of that. So I am, I know I'm not going to make any hard to find, you know, declarations about it, but I would say this is mostly a personal thing. I couldn't really see any actual community, at least from the outside.
I think it doesn't really seem like there's a lot of interpersonal connection for these blogs, like between each other. However, I think like just the nature of the tagging, of being like part of these tags, part of this aesthetic, sharing your own self-made images. It also, we'll get into this later, but it's very reminiscent of the Thinspo community that functioned on Tumblr in the early 2010s, where it was not always necessarily about interacting with each other so much as supporting each other's harmful ideologies.
Yeah. And just maybe posting was enough, but it doesn't seem like, at least from the identity that these girl bloggers are, you know, impersonating, doesn't seem like they really value, you know, friendship and connection.
No.
Seems like they value self-destructive like tendencies.
It's very isolating, but in a way of like, I'm better than everyone else, so I don't need anyone else. But again, something we are going to get into.
Yeah, there's so much. We gotta like stay on track so that we don't get upset, because I don't want to get upset.
But before we get into like really the like actual themes of the posts, we want to just kind of set a baseline. We've explained what the concept of a girl blogger is. And if that was not descriptive enough, we are going to completely set the scene of what imagery is in these posts. Like we said, it relates to Lolita. It relates to like Russian ballerina, whatever the fuck that means. It relates to like New York socialite girl, heroin chic, all these images that separately existed on Tumblr at different points in time, now all brought together under this one umbrella. So yeah. Carly, would you like to share some of the main like idols and media pieces?
Yeah. So some of the main idols, and they're mostly women because a big part of girl blogging is the hatred of men. Let's get that straight right off the bat. Some big ones are Sylvia Plath, Lana Del Rey, Amy Dunn from Gone Girl, the Golden Age Victoria's Secret Angels, which are like early 2000s, maybe a little bit of 90s, which is very interesting since that was before Victoria's Secret was aware at all of being representative of real people. And then I think Lily Rose Depp makes an appearance here and there. I don't know. So I don't even random. Know any movie that she's in. So I don't know where they're pulling this from.
I think it is just that she is white and blonde and has lip fillers.
You know, that's probably a good enough reason for them. There's also specific media. Like there's these specific movies that get so much pulled from them for the girl bloggers. They're like usually 90s movies, maybe. I mean, they're
early
kind of
2000s.
From, yeah.
It's the same content that was popular in 2014.
Yeah. So some of the main movies are Girl Interrupted, Black Swan, Jennifer's Body. We've got for movies, Girl Interrupted, Black Swan, Jennifer's Body, The Virgin Suicides. I think those are the big movies. Interesting that they're all white women as the protagonists.
And like, not a shock.
No, not a shock at all. Some books are The Bell Jar, Sylvia Plath book, so typical. My Dark Vanessa, which is a, oh God, that one gets me upset because it is a novel about a student-teacher relationship that's very clearly not okay. Like, and right. the author does not try to make it okay. But weird that its aesthetics are used on Tumblr.
There's more to be said on this topic.
Yes. There's Lolita, which we have a whole section about. And My Year of Rest and Relaxation. No.
Which Carly has thoughts about.
I need a moment to talk about this book. Okay, so if you have any intentions of reading it, maybe skip over the next couple minutes. So My Year of Rest and Relaxation, I think, is a satirical novel because the main character is a very rich white woman who decides to take a year to sit in her apartment and decompose. And there's also, like, most of the actual writing is talking about all the drugs that she takes, like sleeping pills and like barbiturates, or basically every pill under the sun she takes. And I think that because the majority of people online have very limited media literacy skills, they just kind of worship this character. And I have my opinions about certain parts of the plot and the ending, which I'm not a fan of. But it's really just when it starts getting turned into an aesthetic and like bits and pieces of the story are pulled out to be like appealing to the masses, it's when like the actual book starts to break down and become kind of like separated from the meaning that I think the author was going towards.
Yeah, that happens with so much media on Tumblr. Like we've said over and over, if you were on Tumblr in the peak Tumblr era, like things like Lolita got taken out of context. And even we on this podcast make a lot of Gone Girl jokes, but they're completely ironic. We don't think Amy Dunn is a good person. We don't think that like violence and self-destruction are actually solutions to your problems. It's kind of just like a funny girl boss jokes, but it does tend to come off that the girl bloggers are not kidding when they blog about these pieces of media.
Yeah. And I think like specifically with Lolita, like when you remove the complexity from a book like that and just reduce it to aesthetics, it's like the aesthetics of Lolita are very problematic. Like the aesthetics are just like romanticizing, sexualizing children. So I don't know how many girl bloggers have actually read Lolita. I want to say probably not a lot.
I do agree that that is certainly what happened in 2014 as well.
Yeah.
Everybody heard Lana Del Rey's Lolita and they were like, that's it. I love it.
And I, you know, I hope that Lana Del Rey herself has read Lolita. I mean, I hope that she has, but, you know, can't expect too much, especially from her.
But something I found really interesting about like the combination of all of these pieces of media that, like we've said, are being pulled so out of context, being aestheticized in a way that rejects the social commentary that a lot of them are really based on. While doing research for this episode, I was looking at the WAIF wiki, which is a place I never expected to go. And I found this really interesting quote where under the media section of the WAIF wiki, they wrote, often they would aspire to be like one of these characters, as despite their personality flaws and poor relationships, the characters live picturesque lives filled with monetary success, beautiful lifestyles, drama, and occasionally hope for recovery.
That is interesting. I think, like, I haven't read or seen all of the media that we talked about, but like for the Bell Jar, I have read. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like a character that probably not a lot of people actually relate to, but they might aspire to. Like, the character in The Bell Jar is like very well off, you know, can afford all of these, you know, treatment places. And that's not something that probably a lot of the girl bloggers have actually experienced. Yeah. But maybe like that sort of like proof that, you know, there's something wrong with you, maybe something that is enticing. Same thing with Girl Interrupted. I'm pretty sure that takes place in a mental institution. I do think a hope for recovery is something that's pretty rare in these medias, or at least it's like a hope for recovery that still has a lot of anti-recovery messages in it.
Yeah, it's so thinly veiled. But in order to dig into that, we are going to separate this episode into three main topics. that were very present on 2014 Tumblr, as per Kat's research, really digs into the complexities of these themes, how they showed up, and what they meant for the psyche of teenage girls in the early 2010s era, and what it means to have grown up into a modern Tumblr woman, as it were, having experienced these themes and this imagery at such a young age without all of the skills to decipher them as harmful. So this episode will be split into sections about mental illness, primarily focusing on themes of like depression and mania, are really common. Eating disorders, which is a main thread of girl blogging, and self-sexualization, but in a really harmful way that is often infantilizing. Like I said, pretty much the picture of 2014 Tumblr just existing again. So starting with the real baseline of the problem here, which is mental illness in it.
It's always mental illness.
It always comes back. I mean, really, at the end of the day, why are you on Tumblr if you're not mentally ill?
Yeah. You could always count on Tumblr to be a safe space. Safe, I'll say that, you know, cautiously.
An anonymous space for the mentally ill.
Anonymous. That's probably better. So a Cypress psychologist named Dr. Catherine Talbot says that part of the problem stemmed from the way that Tumblr encouraged and allowed complete anonymity. This had both negative and positive consequences in allowing users to create and engage with online communities without the interference of real-world factors. This means that users can create new identities and find communities in which they feel a sense of belonging without fear of real-world consequences.
Which we've been saying. We agree with you, Dr. Catherine Talbot.
I mean, she is a doctor, so she probably knows what she's talking about.
Get Dr. Catherine Talbot on the pod. But it's true. It is really the anonymity that gives so much space to this kind of blogging, this kind of self-referential and really dark and sad blogging that, like we've said before, if your friends don't know you have a blog, you can post anything without anyone being worried about you.
Yeah. And I'd say this is not content you would see on Instagram, like by any means.
I do see it on TikTok occasionally, like things that are like girl bloggy photos, but it's, in my experience, maybe it's just my algorithm, it's a lot less overt on like Tumblr and Instagram.
Yeah. I feel like there's like an undercurrent of irony that you can't really detect on Tumblr. I don't know if it's there.
I was going to say, I don't think it's ironic on Tumblr.
Yeah.
The source material is legit.
Yeah.
Well, so in addition to just like general themes of depression and self-hatred, you know, the typical things that come with mental illness blogging, something else that's really, really common amongst this type of blogging is the romanticization of being delusional. Delusional is a word that comes up a lot in girl blogging, which I am curious. I don't have an answer to this rhetorical question I am posing. I see delusional used as like a joke on other social medias to say like, I'm just living in my delusions, la la la. But like, they're very self-aware. And I really can't tell if delusional is being used as self-aware or proud on girl blogging Tumblr.
I really don't know. But I think it's like so tied in with the mental illness part that it seems like it's not really something they have control over or even want to change.
Yes.
Because it's like they're just so wrapped up in this that, you know, being delusional is more about being against recovering from mental illness or learning how to cope with it, that they're just like, this is my life, this is who I am, and I'm not really interested in changing it. That's my interpretation. But it is interestingly just, it's very unique to Tumblr that I don't think you get this sort of romanticization of being delusional, like on any other social media.
No, truly. And so it's spot on. Something that like I said, I don't really see in other platforms using the term delusional as a joke is that on Tumblr, on girl blogs, if I might call it that, the imagery and quotes that they pull from these books and artists, a lot of times have to do with like neuroticism, or extreme personality disorders. So like the bell jar, like you were saying, they kind of boil them down though, from these really serious and hard to deal with mental illnesses to like me and my delusions.
Yeah.
And they also somehow at the same time view themselves as above others because of their delusions. So there's an air of mania to it all of,
yeah,
I am broken, I am damaged, I am ill, but I'm better than everybody else.
Yeah. Or I'm not willing to really do anything about it to get better, yeah, because I'm better this way.
Right. Or
maybe this is my identity and getting rid of my mental illness would get rid of my identity, which I'm sure, ooh, you know.
Do not tell the girl bloggers that. I don't think they're ready for that type of self-introspection. But
probably not.
Yeah, it's all steeped in this kind of like, I want to say irony, but I genuinely can't tell. And I, you know, dear listeners, I wish I could give you the answer. I wish I could tell you that girl blogging was ironic, but I truly fear it is not. And it is just steeped in so much self-hatred in ways of, I have no connection to others, but it's because I'm better than them. I'm perfect in every way, but still I need to be skinnier. I need to be hotter. I need to be more delusional? Question mark.
Yeah. I feel like a big part of it is just resistance to getting better and kind of an acceptance of like, this is the pain that I feel. And I know like from just reading some posts on these blogs, like a lot of these girls like they have a lot of trauma. Like some of them like are on medication, like are at least, you know, aware of the mental illnesses that they have, but they just are succumbing to like this anti-self-reflection and anti-recovery. And it's just so reminiscent of 2014 that it makes me sick to my stomach.
Yeah, it's almost, I dare say this whole embracing the delusion is like kind of a permissive form of self-harm. Of all these things I do to myself, this way that I hate myself, the way that I treat my body is okay because I'm just a girl blogger. And like, we mentioned earlier, one of the kind of like related aesthetics or maybe communities loosely say is like the female manipulator trope, which there's a million things to say about the female manipulator trope and its relationships to the original male manipulator trope and call her daddy, which anyway, female manipulator, like, aesthetics, I don't know if it has one, to be honest, but there's like themes within it of like insanity and toxicity and being problematic and being a hater is like one I see on girl blogs a lot, is like just me and being a hater, which is like things that we say but we don't mean it,
we're being maybe funny.
Right. And then there's also the really common phrase of the feminine urge to, and then insert incredibly self-destructive or self-harmful activity or thought process here.
Yeah. I would say also like a big thing is just hatred of men. And, you know, I'm not going to tell anybody to not hate men. I mean, I say it like every day. But when it is used in this context, it always feels a little wrong. Like, There's a lot there to unpack.
Yeah, I think if we were to like skim the surface of it, there's an air of, again, what happened on 2014 Tumblr, which is feeling unwanted by the people who determine value in our society, which is men currently, mm-hmm. unfortunately. And I think girl blogging has this air of, if men don't want me, then I'll just hate them all.
Yeah, and hate myself in the process.
And hate myself because they don't want me, but then say, well, I don't want anyone to want me. Like,
yeah,
it's such a vicious little circle that they've created here.
I also see a lot of like imagery about like specifically the scenes in these movies of like girls like covered in blood, like in Gone Girl. I don't know if you've seen these. It's a little crazy, but like in Gone Girl, Jennifer's Body, like those are the two big ones.
Oh,
Black
yes.
Swan, like these kind of like body horror imagery, but it's like, I see a lot of like, oh, girls and blood, my favorite thing. And I think it's really just like rejecting the way that women are seen like on other social media platforms. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of like the complete opposite. I go into it. I have some notes on it a little bit later. But there is one – I did want to have a note about the Fleabag era, which is bigger on TikTok than I'd say on Tumblr. I feel like there's a lot of overlap between specifically the mental illness part of girl blogging
mm-hmm.
and Fleabag era. Did you see Fleabag?
I watched one episode, but I've gotten so much content about it. And I did read that essay on dissociative feminism. And mm-hmm. Binge-topia has an episode about dissociative feminism. So I am familiar with the topic.
Yeah. So the Fleabag era kind of identity comes more exclusive because of the trans roots in femininity or like female associated behaviors that are in Fleabag, the show. Like on TikTok specifically, there will be repeated phrases like, oh, men will never understand, or this is for girls only. According to Rain Fisher Kwan, there is a growing prevalence of young women online expressing their identities through an artfully curated list of the things they consume or aspire to consume. These roundups of cultural trends often implicitly serve to chicly signal one's mental illnesses to the public. Even though this is about the Fleabag era, I feel like this is really applies to girl blogging.
Where it 100%.
Is, even though it's dark, the way that these posts are like framed, I think it's also like there is an aesthetic tied to it. So it's supposed to be presenting it in a way that's, I don't know if palatable is the right word, but still like curated.
Yeah, it's definitely saying there's just so many layers to it, or there could be so many layers to it that are genuinely impossible to decipher, because these blogs at once being so populated with content, at the same time are very scant of individual thoughts.
Yeah, they are very interchangeable.
Yeah, it's so hive mind. Mm-hmm. And I feel like maybe that's where I get that sense of community from, is that no one really speaks for themselves in the girl blogging space online. It almost like it doesn't matter what their personal experience is, because they've now identified as a girl blogger. And so it's their experience is just the life of a girl blogger. A girl blogger is mentally ill. She has an eating disorder. She has problems with her self-sexualization. And that's just who she is.
Yeah. It's very interesting.
I think the Fleabag era does like that same thing though, where it's like, I'm just this person resistant to love, or I'm just this person that nobody understands. And rather than create and self-conceptualize an identity of their own, they just say, I'm in my Fleabag era.
Yeah. It's a way to make, I guess it is a way to make sense of your experiences.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that the way that girl bloggers do it is very problematic. And that's why we have this episode.
Exactly.
To critique it. I mean, we love to talk shit, but we're trying to do it in a researchy way.
Yeah. I think as much as I am concerned for the girl bloggers, I also don't want any of this to come off across as like judgmental, because like, as we've said a dozen times over, we grew up in the 2014 Tumblr era. We purposefully or non-purposefully ingested a lot of harmful media. And I think, like, I mean, I can talk about this more when we get into the Lolita section of the episode, but I mean, like, I read Lolita at 14 and I certainly did not understand the deeper meaning to it and the point that the narrative was trying to get across. I had Lana Del Rey sunglasses on while I was reading it. And I was only seeing what Tumblr had told me to see in it.
Yeah.
And so if you're a young woman, or I want to say femme identifying person, but it really does seem very cisgender, the girl blogging experience. If you're a young woman on the internet and you find this community and it feels relatable because you have a mental illness, perhaps that you don't have a name for yet, that you don't have a diagnosis for, that you don't actually have a support system for, this community that says, well, actually your mental illness is fine. You're better than everyone else because you have it. And look at all these hot, skinny, rich white women that you could be like if you just let yourself be ill.
Yeah. No, I totally see the appeal. I mean, and it's why, like, before starting the research for this episode, like, I wanted and I did blog a lot of this content. And I didn't really, like, I saw girl bloggers, like, yes, I'm a girl, I blog. I guess, you know, sure, I could be a girl blogger. But, you know, when you take a deeper look, it starts to become a little bit more
sinister.
Bad. Yeah, sinister.
Yeah, I think we actually, I don't remember what episode it was on that in the process of doing our research for it, we came across the phrase girl blogging for the first time. And I don't know if I'd seen the tag personally on Tumblr yet, but I said to Carly, oh, we should definitely look into this more. And then serendipitously, Kat reached out to us and was like, I'd love for you to talk more about the young girl experience on Tumblr. And I was like, boy, do we have something to tell you. It did not end in 2015.
Yeah.
So that said, with our deep interest in the girl blogging community expressed wholeheartedly.
We'll end this section with another quote that kind of sums up our thoughts and the takeaways about mental illness in the girl blogging community. So, those with mental illnesses embrace their neurodiversity, leading to the emergence of a new viewpoint coined the creativity mystique by Katie Rose Guest Perrall. According to Perrall, the creativity mystique is a product of the era of modern psychiatry that suggests not only that mood disorders are sources of creative genius, but also that medical treatment should take patient creativity into account.
How interesting. I feel like I could talk about that on its own forever.
We probably should have our own episode about creativity, because I totally get this, where, like, especially on Tumblr, being mentally ill was a good thing.
Yes.
And it's a theme, like, in the larger artistic communities, like writing and like fine art, where we're supposed to, like, especially like one of the biggest, like, painters, you know, Vincent van Gogh, people romanticize his mental illness when it's like, no, let's not do that. And I think it's definitely been a part of, like, our larger culture that the girl bloggers have, you know, made a part of their identity too.
Yeah. And beyond romanticizing just mental illness at large as, like, a source of identity or even a source of pride, what is really, really saddening to see come back so strongly, or perhaps maybe never have gone away, but to really be featured prominently in a large part of the Tumblr community, is once again a promotion of disordered eating.
Yeah. And, you know, this was so big in 2014 that, like, seeing it today just makes me so sad. So I would say that girl blogging and pro Anna are just two communities that do overlap. I wouldn't say that they're the same, because pro Anna blogs are, that's all of their content, really.
Yeah.
I would say that, like, they dedicate their entire blogs to things like, like meal planning, calorie counting, right. tips. I've seen, like, I did a research project for the Proana communities, and I realized this trend kind of thing called Meanspo. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's when people, so Meanspo is, some people will say, please send me Meanspo, or they'll post it. And it's just them like being completely awful to themselves or others, being like, you know, like, you're fat, you're gross, you should lose weight, like stuff like that. It is so awful. And I don't think I really saw that on many of the girl blogs or mm-hmm. girl bloggers. I would say it's more the aesthetic that they pull from Proana right. blogs.
What's so interesting to me is that, I mean, maybe I was just fortunate enough not to have seen this in 2014, but I don't know that I ever saw asks for like bullying to like encourage.
Yep. I mean, it gets dark. It gets really, really dark.
I will say I learned from, again, a Binchtopia episode. It's one of their bonus episodes is on fem cells. And I learned from that episode that there is like a common thing in the fem cell community is to tell each other what is wrong with their appearance so that they can, to my understanding, better like manipulate the way people perceive them. And it's called like looks maxing. That is its whole own thing, but it shares that similar vein of like, tell me what's wrong with me. And it's like, validate my insecurities, but also help me find new ones so that I can be aware of them. Like it's, fem cell is its whole own thing, but you're totally right. The girl bloggers, I don't think are quite so intentional about this as Proana blogs are, where they're like asking specifically for people to encourage their eating disorders or to help them find better ways to act them out. I think girl blogging, aside from like quotes from movies, is really an imagery heavy experience. Yeah. And it's all just about these images. But of course, we with critical thinking skills know that images influence your thought patterns.
Yeah. I would say like how it manifests mainly is in like mood boards. And the mood boards will have things like Diet Coke, gum, cigarettes, which are all
Lana
like
Del dieting.
Rey. And they're like dieting things. So it's very transparent. Really,
it's like, overt and silent.
Yeah. And I'd say like, you know, we kind of touched on this before, but like all of like the idols and the media that girl bloggers like are all of extremely skinny women. And just like the Victoria's Secret angels, like, come on.
And like you said earlier, of course, they're obsessed with the quote unquote, we do not support this quote, but golden era of angels, which was back when, you know, Victoria's Secret was actually vehemently fat phobic and intentionally excluded women of size like 2 and above, and was only a space for angels models who weighed like 100 pounds or less.
Yeah. No, it's very transparent. And I just, even though it is more subtle, I think if you have like any knowledge of Proana, you'd be able to identify it as Proana content pretty quickly. I just don't know if all of the people that are ingesting this content are aware of that, or if they're just thinking, oh yeah, Diet Coke and cigarettes and all these skinny people. That's love this so content.
That is so true. I think back in 2014, and like you were saying, even with current Proana blogs, which makes me sick to think still exists, it is so overt that they're saying like, I have an eating disorder, promote my eating disorder. Like this content is about eating disorders. And on the girl blogs, if they're not paying attention to where the imagery is coming from, to them, it is just an aesthetic. But in order to aspire to that aesthetic or fulfill that aesthetic, these are the things that they have to do.
Yeah.
Because the aesthetic is so unattainable.
Yeah. And I really do think that just to talk about Pro Anna's blog specifically, I think we can learn a little bit more about girl blogging from the way that Pro Anna blogs function. I know that according to the Eating Disorders Review of 2019, a residential treatment center in Chicago reported that 30 to 50% of its teen patients were using social media to support their eating disorders. And this is now that they have, you know, not really, but have tried to like limit your ability to search like Thinspo and stuff. I sent you a screenshot a couple weeks ago of how easy it is to get past this. I didn't look up Thinspo, but I, you know, I'm sure it's the same way, but I did search NymFit. It gave me this message. I was like, these search results are likely to contain content that does not comply with Tumblr's community guidelines. So here's like, you know, how to learn more about that. But then it says, try exploring all of these misspellings of NymFit. You know, that I just can't believe they are that stupid.
Tumblr also, I think I forgot to mention this on the episode we did about trauma buzzwords. So this is an aside unrelated to girl blogging, but has to do with the problematicness of Tumblr. They know that there is so much content around and promoting mental illnesses that when I was looking at memes about trauma to post on our Instagram, I got a message from a bot that Tumblr has that's called CocoBot that sends you messages and asks you, like, are you doing well? Do you need someone to talk to? Do you need mental health resources? Like, we see that you're trying to send memes about trauma. Like, do you need to talk to someone? And I ignored it because I was
which I'm sure that
memes.
Everybody that gets that message does as well.
But I'd be so curious to know, like, are they sending that flag bot to people searching NymFit content? Because that's concerning. And I almost wonder, as ineffectual as I found the stupid CocoBot, I do wonder if that had existed in 2014, would it have shocked some of us into reality? Or
I'm not sure.
Would we have continued denying that the content was as unhealthy as it is? And like, that's why on the one hand, like these content warnings, these moderations, these notices of saying like, this is really not safe content to be consuming, but making it so easy to bypass is like, I see them trying and I would hope it works. But at the same time, if you're trying to help a community where the main theme is being delusional about how perfect you are for being mentally ill, I don't think it's enough.
Yeah. I would be curious to see if that bot or like similar bots have actually helped anybody. I surely think it's better than nothing.
Yeah.
But I do think that like social media platforms like Tumblr, Pinterest, Instagram, they all know that this content is proliferating, even though they, you know, put that stupid message and then all the suggested tags, like they have to know that people are like bypassing their rules because it is so easy to, and also they're giving them like, they are, you know, people that view ads. So why would they want to really kick them off?
Yeah. I think it's so interesting that Tumblr actually does address the fact that this content is so common on their platform by things like identifying common tags like NymFit. Like, that is not one that you would think a platform would really be aware of. Whereas like Thinspo is so obvious. Pro Anna is so obvious. And they addressed those years ago. And however, they don't remove the content. And Pinterest and Instagram, I think, are even worse about it. I don't think they give a shit that it's on their platform. Where at least Tumblr is like, hey, we get it. We are the internet's hub for mental illness. We don't want to be, but we are. Whereas Instagram and Pinterest are like, they're just posting pretty pictures of skinny girls.
Actually, I have a quote that kind of ties into that. So I'll read it. As the authors detail on Tumblr, users would create blogs which gave a performance of recovery so as to conceal problematic content and evade the scrutiny of moderators. It is complicated to distinguish what is and what isn't pro-Anna and where recovery meets obfuscation, given that users both disguise eating disorder content and deny pro-Anna themes on blogs. This meant that much of the pro-Anna content on the platform was able to spread unchecked and outside of the algorithmic gaze.
Interesting.
So, I mean, I think that if you like look at these blogs for like more than a minute, you'd be able to tell that they're not actually like pro-recovery. Mm-mm. But they just have, you know, used the loopholes to their benefit to be able to get away with it. I also feel like movies and TV shows that are often used as like girl blogging imagery that try to show the dark realities of eating disorders, like To the Bone is the big one. And I have so many problems with that movie where it doesn't actually succeed in showing the realities of an eating disorder because, one, it's fictional and it usually like plays into stereotypes. And it just is like, it's visual. And like, especially with To the Bone, where they made Lily Collins like lose a bunch of weight for the role.
Yes.
And they added a ton of CGI to make her even skinnier. It's like, this is just adding fuel to the fire. I've seen posts like when I was doing my research for my presentation that were like, you know, I want to be To the Bone skinny. I don't want to be just regular skinny. And it's just, you know, I just think it's so unfortunate that it is hard to create any sort of visual media that is going to like critique eating disorders when there's such a visually like, you know, run disease. Like it's all focused on image that I just think is going to be hard, like no matter what way you approach it. But I do think that a lot of the media is just really tone deaf.
Yeah, that is so true. I think, obviously, with To the Bone, like casting a major and conventionally attractive and already skinny actress like Lily Collins that people on the internet already loved to look at and reblog photos of simply because she's pretty, casting her in a role about body insecurities and body dysmorphia maybe wasn't the best choice.
Yeah.
But you're so right in that, like, these blogs, these profiles are entirely willing and motivated to take these things out of context because you're right, they're so anti-recovery. And, but again, I think such a huge part of the issue is how young the people are behind these blogs. I can't say how old these girl bloggers are, but if it's anything from our own experience, I would imagine that they're quite young because reblogging things like a 9-panel mood board of Diet Coke and Serena Vanderwoodson and Coach pickleball paddles, I swear to God, that's something I saw.
I saw that too. I was very confused. I was like, I'm missing something here.
Like, reblogging these images under the guise of aesthetics when really the deeper meaning is body aspirations, it's like, it's never going to be possible to moderate. And it's also so hard to get through to them because they're young. They don't have like really well-adapted media literacy skills yet. Ugh, it's just so sad.
I know. And even like besides like the mood boards with like Diet Coke and cigarettes and stuff like that, like just the stuff that is, you know, reblogging pictures of the Victoria's Secret angels or like other skinny white girls. It's like, okay, that stuff can't be moderated because it technically doesn't break any guidelines, but it is promoting fat phobia. So, you know, at the end of the day, even if you're not pro Anna or you don't say that you're pro Anna, by just, you know, excluding girls that are like above a size 2 from your aesthetic, like, that's enough to, you know, be problematic.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, it's like, if one of the icons of this aesthetic is like Bella Hadid, like, what is someone supposed to do? What is anyone supposed to do about that? Like,
none of us look like Bella Hadid.
Like, regardless of whether Bella Hadid does or does not have an eating disorder, that is not my business to examine, but other people do examine online. Like, there's nothing stopping anyone from reblogging a picture of her in low-waisted jeans. Like,
yeah.
But like you're saying, if there's a theme on your blog of no women of a different body type, you're very clearly idealizing one body look that tends to come with the promotion of the way to get to that body.
Yeah. this is a hard topic. Section. Yeah. I'll say one last thing I want to say is that I think on Pro Anna blogs and thus on girl blogging blogs, there's an idealized version of the anorexic girl. And it, you know, maybe bulimia is part of it, but usually it's just anorexia. And it is an ideal that very few people with eating disorders actually can relate to. True. And it's usually a girl who is white, extremely and sickly thin. They've usually been in a treatment center or have been hospitalized, which is really not the case for most people with eating disorders. And they are not interested in getting better, but they are still beautiful. They have to be beautiful.
Right.
And I think that this, you know, this ideal isn't promoted as heavily on girl bloggers, but it's still there. Yeah. It might not be overt, but it's still there and it's still really problematic. And it's not something that's helping anybody get better.
No. And so then in relation to all of the, it feels so gross to say body aesthetics that these blogs prioritize. But
it is, that is what it is.
I know, it really is. It's a bodily aesthetic that they idealize. Part of the narrative that comes with these bodily aesthetics are, once again, just like in fucking 2014, is the Lolita theme.
Yeah. And we're not going to discount Lana's influence on whole section.
I think Lana just has a profound influence on this whole topic. Yeah. And I think that is why, I mean, we'll get to this later when we really synthesize all of this, but I really think that 2014 Lana Tumblr walked so that girl blogging could run.
Yeah, so true.
I don't think you could have girl blogging as it exists today without 2014 Lana Tumblr.
Yeah.
No, and I don't know what preceded 2014 Lana Tumblr. I don't know if MySpace had this community.
I don't know, but we do know that Lolita has always been a visual novel.
Yes. And it was made into a movie.
It was. I think it was made into two movies.
Yeah. And I think the first one, I could be totally wrong about this, but I think the first one may have been more in the vision of the writer's purpose, which if for some reason, if one of our listeners who is an avid Tumblr user or has knowledge of the Tumblr era doesn't know what Lolita is about, I will quickly summarize. Lolita is about the main character, Humbert Humbert, who falls in love with a roughly 11-year-old girl and then isolates her from her family in order to attempt to rape her. And the point of the book, according to the author, was to show how gross this is and how insane and devoid of humanity the main character is. And he even calls Lolita it's not her name. That's what he calls her. He calls her a nymphette. And so that's where that phrase
Yeah, that's where it comes from, right?
Yeah, I'm fairly certain. But I believe one of the two movies was more accurate to the depicting that main character is gross and scary and threatening and wrong. And I think the other one overly romanticized it. And maybe that's where all of this came from. Because I do recall vividly at approximately 13 years old, trying to find the Lolita movie on YouTube for free because there was nowhere else you could watch it.
Yeah. Well, I know that, like,
a Google Drive on Tumblr.
Yeah. Well, I know that the original, so I just looked it up real quick. So there was a film in 1962 and then later in 1997. But the 1962 version, the reason why it might not have been available is because the actress who played Alita was only 14 when the movie was filmed, which definitely would not fly today. And it shouldn't fly because I don't know what like they actually showed in the movie, but don't think that really should have happened.
Well, and that is to say that I was 13 and looking to watch it.
Yeah, so maybe it's a good thing you didn't find it.
I was seeing stills of it on Tumblr, and I was in my listening to Lana Del Rey era, and she has a song called Lolita. And let me just look up the lyrics. So just for some context, I'm not going to read all of the lyrics because there's a lot of them, but perhaps the most telling part of the song is the bridge where she says, I want my cake and I want to eat it too. I want to have fun and be in love with you. I know that I'm a mess with my long hair and my suntan short dress, bare feet. I don't care what they say about me, what they say about me, because I know that it's L-O-V-E. You make me happy. You make me happy. And I never listen to anyone. Let them all say, hey, Lolita, hey, hey, Lolita, hey, I know what the boys want. I'm not going to play.
Oh, that's great.
So visual image after visual image of young sexualized girl, and in an embracing way. And I hope that Lana was being referential to the actual meaning of the book and expressing the harmfulness of this, but her media is amongst the top ones that get taken out of context if that is the case.
I don't really have a lot of hope that she was being self-aware, because she often isn't.
As what may be the leader of the girl bloggers, she is another artist that I cannot decipher if any of it is steeped in irony or in deeper meaning or in double meaning. I genuinely can't tell.
Yeah. And the thing is most people online can't tell either, and they don't care to tell.
The girl bloggers certainly are not concerned with getting a critical meaning out of any of the media that they idolize.
No. So one thing I did find when I was looking at specifically Nymphit blogs, and I think that this is one thing that does have its own community. Like, they're not, it's not always within a girl blogging like part of Tumblr. There are plenty of blogs that are just dedicated to Lolita. And I would say that like how a lot of these blogs define Nymphit is like a young woman that has a certain effect on older men. And that's kind of like where I think it all stems from, of like, we touched on it earlier on, like this hatred of men and also like rejection of them, but still a focus on men and like visuals that are like stemmed from the patriarchy.
Yeah.
That I find really interesting.
That definition definitely is the one that comes from Nabokov's Lolita. Because I remember from reading it that the main character describes these young girls, the nymphs, as he calls it. He says that it takes a special eye to recognize them, that it's not just any little girl. It's not just beautiful little girls. It's the ones that have this special effect only on this certain type of man, which is to say pedophiles. It's like only the certain type of man can identify the nymphet. And so it's so strange that people would want to be this thing. But again, I get it. It's validating.
Yeah. And I'm sure that a lot of these girls that are engaging with this content like are victims. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not going to be the one to like shame them for finding any sort of comfort in this, but I do think like specifically with girl blogging, it takes this aesthetic and just takes all of the complexity out of it. And while I'm sure a lot of the Nymphit blogs are actually more self-aware because they dedicate their whole blog to it, and they're like, I understand this is problematic. A lot of them state that, which you don't see on the girl blogging part.
Yeah, no.
we've got this quote about the aesthetics of Lolita. So, in most literary criticism of the novel and in the preface of the novel itself, attention is repeatedly drawn to its aesthetics, its rarefied elegance, and how this same elegance is part of its horror, distracting a reader from the banal cruelty and evil of the narrator's kidnapping and rape of a 12-year-old girl.
Precisely.
I don't know how much you remember of the book, and you said yourself that you don't really – you probably didn't analyze it the way you should have.
Certainly I did not, but I do – I actually remember reading a lot of it because I was – really obsessed with it. And I think that speaks to what part of the 2014 Tumblr girl experience was that I assume what these girl bloggers are now, which was young and vulnerable. And I was at 14 years old already at a point in my life that I felt objectified by the men around me. I was already getting catcalled. I already knew that people looked at me in a certain way because of what my body looked like. And I was scared of it. But at the same time, this weird part of Tumblr almost assigned a certain amount of power to it.
Yeah.
Of this, the Lana Del Rey side of Tumblr basically said, like, if you are the Lolita, then you have the sexual power in this relationship. You own the control of these men's attention. And like, that's obviously not the case, where these men, older men who are physically capable of taking advantage of you, like, they hold the power. That is where the power is. And there's a sense of delusion to it that I think maybe provides a sense of safety for young women who feel objectified, is that, like, if you feel like you're in control of the objectification, then it can't hurt you.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And it just makes me sad, because I really think there is a better solution. Certainly. I just think that it's not something you can find on Tumblr.
No.
Just the nature of the platform. And I don't know if there's really any way to use Lolita as a way to, like, kind of analyze, like, pedophilia, not for children at least. And the thing is that, especially when, I don't know about these girl bloggers, but when we were on Tumblr, we were all minors, and there's no way that we would have been able to read that book as an adult could, you know, from that older perspective. And that's why I'm glad I never read Lolita. And I don't even know if I'm ready to read it now, because it is, like, it's such a heavy book. And I just think that it's not, even though, like we've said, you know, aesthetics are a huge part of the book, that doesn't mean that Lolita should be turned into an aesthetic. Like, I just don't think that that's healthy at all. Absolutely not.
And I know from reading criticisms about the book and essays about the book that one of the most popular visual images is actually the cover that gets printed all the time of the young girl. I think it's from the movie, one of the movies, of the girl laying in the grass with the heart-shaped lollipop.
Yeah,
or she has a lollipop and heart-shaped sunglasses, maybe, which heart-shaped sunglasses are Lana Del Rey's thing, and girl bloggers love them. But I remember reading that Nabokov very specifically said when the book came out that it should not have the girl on the cover, because the book wasn't actually about her. And that he wanted it to have the male narrator on the cover, because it should be very evident that it actually had nothing to do with the girl at all.
I did actually see a little bit of discourse surrounding the cover, because apparently there were several different versions of the cover, like, throughout all of its editions. Wait, let me find it. Yeah, so there have been roughly 200 Lolita covers since its original cover, which was just blank, and it just had black letters over a shade of green that just said Lolita on it. So I really think that it's just been morphed so much.
Yeah.
And apparently an erotic fiction publisher called Olympia Press managed to remake a cover of it that was just like really dirty and just really wrong. So I think like it's just when pop culture gets a hold of something, it just loses meaning. And, you know, I'm sure that Nabokov is rolling in his grave at some of the content on Tumblr.
Yeah, I would say that as well-intentioned and arguably well-written as that book is, I have absolutely no desire to ever reread it as an adult. I am perfectly content reading criticism of it that explains the themes without having to experience them again firsthand as a reader. And unfortunately, I do feel our society has progressed past the need for Vladimir Nabokov's Lolita. I think if it could be erased from the internet, I think it would do a lot of good.
Yeah, I think it would be a net positive.
Like, certainly we can learn about media literacy and criticism of the sexualization of young women from any other source.
Yeah. You know, since I've never read the book, I can't criticize it too much, but
I can.
Enough said.
No,
that's totally fair. Because I do think that it's just been turned into something that it never was supposed to be. And
precisely.
You know, I'm sure that the book has its merits. Like, it is a very well-known classic. But I just don't think it's meant for children. And it's definitely not meant for the internet.
No.
And or I think, Lana Del Rey.
Girl, like, the damage she did. I think it's the same with, like, Girl Interrupted and the Virgin Suicides. The Virgin Suicides were huge when we were on Tumblr, which again is about self-hypersexualization of minors. Yeah. And it's like, I know that this is one of the main sections that we wanted to focus on because it's so prolific. And I think as with the eating disorder content, it's really subtle on girl blogging accounts because I don't think they ever come right out and say, like, I am a Lolita, other than saying, like, identifying as nymphet or whatever. I don't think it's overt. It doesn't, you know, very clearly state that they're sexualizing themselves. But by constantly pushing this imagery from Lolita, which is taken out of context, they are internalizing that narrative.
Yeah.
And it's so, so damaging.
Yeah. It does not have to be overt for it to be, like, problematic or damaging.
Yeah.
And some could argue that that makes it worse because it's a way to, like, you know, attract people to this sort of community that's not that bad. You know, it's just – it's funny. It's, you know, relatable. But then when you look a little deeper, like we've done this episode, you realize like how much of it is derived from other parts of Tumblr that are super, super problematic and should be like banished from the internet.
Yeah. And I think in that way, all of these themes, these three really core tenets of girl blogging are unfortunately somewhat integral to the experience of being on Tumblr as a young girl.
I mean, it's huge, and that's why we're doing a whole episode about it, is because it's not a small community.
No,
it's like probably the majority of content on Tumblr, I would say. Like,
while we love to appreciate Tumblr for being like such a welcoming fandom space, for being such like a funny space, and again, like that anonymity making it feel like a safe place to be yourself, it is at the same time like a really dark corner of the internet because it provides so much safety and concealment for these kinds of communities, these kinds of content makers. And I would say that these themes certainly show up on other platforms of social media. I know that TikTok has been like a really bad place for young women. And we actually are planning to do an episode in the future talking about the Tumblrification of TikTok. But this is all to say that, like, I think our experiences as girls or young women. I feel like I'm more inclined to say girls, is super similar to the one that girls are having today.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So from this essay on Show Studio by Sarah Catherine Cleaver, there's this quote that I think sums up why Tumblr, for the girl blogging community. So there's a certain obsession with sadness on Tumblr. Sadness seems to be kind of around at the moment. You see things that magazines on the whole won't show, self-harm, food obsessions, things that are personal, a fascination for death. I do think it ties in with a global movement.
True. Well put.
So true.
You know, like everything we've been saying, but more well said academically.
Yeah, I feel like we touched on it in the beginning of like these social media alter egos that we come up with. And, you know, there are things that we, it's just kind of a thing now, like on any social media platform. I mean, most people's Instagrams are not anything like their real life. TikTok is pretty much the same way. But Tumblr is unique because you can maintain anonymity. And so these like alter egos are actually even further from our actual identities. I really don't think that a lot of these girl bloggers are like this in real life, because I just don't think that it's something that can really be translated into real life. It just seems like very online.
Mm-hmm.
And so these identities are just completely separate from their like actual authentic self. And like we said before, you can engage in content that, you know, would be frowned upon in the real world, because now like on Tumblr, there really are no consequences.
Yeah. And I think in the way that like Instagram and TikTok and like Facebook, if anyone still cares about that, but maybe even Pinterest, you create a more ideal version of yourself and almost yourself as a brand. Mm. I mean, that's such a huge thing now, is monetizing yourself on social media, but Tumblr does not have that opportunity. And so you can just be, for lack of a better word, your worst self on Tumblr.
Where, like, no, I think that like purposely, that perfectly describes like what the girl blogger is. It's all of these like girls' worst selves that they can just like be proud of their worst, most problematic qualities.
Well, right. They're like, I can be problematic. I can be a hater. I can be toxic. I can say I hate men and I hate myself and I'm better than everyone else. And no one is going to criticize them, because they are in an algorithmic loop of people who agree with them.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, one of the reasons that Kat's project is so amazing is because Hell really is a teenage girl, and being teenage girl is hell. And social media is so tied into that. I think that girlhood was probably a much different experience before social media. I mean, I assume that there were a lot of similar real life experiences, but the experience of being on Tumblr was a different era that weirdly, I think people who were not on Tumblr just simply cannot relate to, but it clearly has not changed. And I would have thought a few years ago that this part of Tumblr kind of went away when Tumblr started to kind of fade out in usership. But clearly the existence of the girl blogger shows that maybe it went a little bit dormant, but it never went away.
Yeah. No, I like just like researching this episode just, you know, made it clear that it really is exactly the same with just a different spin on it. I was getting deja vu, like looking through these posts and being like, oh, you know, if you would have told me that I like transported myself back into 2014, I would have believed you, because it really is just so similar. But now, like, I just hope that there's more resources on the internet now, especially like, I mean, we've got this Coco bot. Maybe that one is really saving lives out here.
God, I hope.
But like, really, there is more resources. And I think that most like teenagers are more, have more internet literacy, and then could hopefully, you know, find other content that isn't as problematic and like promoting self-destructive behavior, but there really is like nothing that'll make them go out and seek that content when there is a community for them. As problematic as it is, you know, it is a community and it makes sense why they're drawn to it.
Yeah. And I think whereas on other platforms, like Instagram is very aestheticized self-care, like promote therapy speak, turn it into a brightly colored carousel with fun Canva graphics. Tumblr doesn't have that. No. Tumblr does not have an emphasis on finding sources and reading critical information. It's just reblog images and reblog other people's thoughts. And I don't think the people that are ending up on Tumblr are looking for content to convince them otherwise. Whereas on Instagram and even TikTok, even though you're being fed an agreeing algorithm, you are occasionally going to stumble upon other information that might get you to think a little bit. But Tumblr, I don't see that happening. And I think that maybe is why it's such the, unfortunately, the perfect space for the girl blogger to exist.
I think that Tumblr is just kind of this like corner of the internet that is just so different from everywhere else. And I mean, that's why we have a whole podcast about it. You couldn't really have a whole podcast about Instagram. Like,
no, there's too many topics and there's no one uniform Instagram experience, but there sure is hell a Tumblr experience.
There really is. It's just this vacuum of like the worst content ever. I think that like the appeal of the girl blogger, really how I think of it, is that it's like a reaction to like the girl boss optimistic feminism that was kind of
so big true in the
mid-2010s. And I think we are all tired of that. And that's why like Fleabag era is like a big, maybe not now, but like in the past few years.
Yeah.
Now we're kind of in this like somewhat self-aware, ironic nihilism. And it's popular in the mainstream, like with the Fleabag era, but on Tumblr, it's just this very specific cocktail of factors that just create the most problematic version of this nihilism that morphs itself into a girl blogger that is just, you know, we talked about it on this episode of like all of its problems. But I just think that the hardest part for me to wrap my head around is just why are we saying this is the feminine experience? Like, why does this have to be like how we define being a woman?
Yeah.
You know, that rubs me the wrong way, because I do think that there is a, you know, a rewarding and like awesome part of being a woman. And I just hate that it's now turned into this thing where you have to be super self-destructive to like be a girl blogger.
Yeah. I think, I mean, you're absolutely right that this feels like the pendulum swinging the other way from the girl boss. Everyone, I mean, I even see posts on TikTok that are like, I'm done being my best self. Like, it's time for me to go feral rat mode. Like, people are tired of the well put together, dare I say, millennial woman who has her shit together, who has a good closet, who has like all of her life in order. And she's a girl blush. She's a CEO. Like, I think it almost feels unrealistic to think that your life could just be so good as a woman, like that people are like, well, I'm not going to have that, so I might as well have the absolute opposite of that. But again, you're right in that they're saying like, this is femininity to me. And this is the peak of femininity. And it is so isolating to live in that kind of content vacuum of believing in a version of femininity that doesn't really exist.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that like the girl boss exists, but also the girl blogger doesn't really exist, because really this is an identity that is very curated. I mean, it doesn't make sense that all of the people that are reblogging this content on Tumblr are all this exact same way. Not it is close. Still an ideal. And like we've talked about, like even all of their idols and the media that they consume, is not representative of even the average experience. Like, it's so specific, and I don't think that it is helping anybody. I understand the appeal, but I hope that we can find a happy medium where we can acknowledge, you know, mental illness and the effects of like a patriarchal society that makes us all like super like hate ourselves most of the time, especially like as teenagers. But I don't think that this girl blogger is the solution. I think that she's doing more harm than good.
So well put. I think, unfortunately, the reality is that as much as we love Tumblr, it did a lot of harm. But maybe and
apparently
our goal
still
is yeah. And maybe our goal as modern Tumblr women is to help undo a little bit of that harm, to dissect these thought patterns in a way that makes us all think about what we experienced. And, you know, if you're a girl blogger and you're listening, it doesn't have to be this way. You can have a fun time on Tumblr. And
yes,
you
just
can
reblog yellow jackets.
You can grow up to be a Tumblr woman who blogs about yellow jackets and not about being a waif.
Yeah, there's more out there for you.
And on that note, we would like to say a very special thank you to Kat for reaching out to us, for inviting us to be part of your awesome thesis exhibit. We can't wait for the site curation to go live. We're so excited to be finally sharing this episode with our listeners. And we hope that you all enjoyed this episode, that it was thought-provoking, and we'd love to hear your thoughts about girl bloggers as well.
Yeah, and once the project goes live, we'll share it on all of our socials and make sure that this awesome project sees as many people as possible. And we are, like, I just want to reiterate, I'm so happy to be a part of this project because we've been wanting to do this for a while, and now we have a real reason. Thank you so much for listening. We are so excited to have you here and hope you tune in again next week. In the meantime, you can follow us on social media. Our Instagram is at xtumblrgirlspod. Our TikTok is at xtumblrgirls. And we, of course, have a Tumblr. You can find us there at xpodcastgirls.tumblr.com. We kindly ask that if you're enjoying the pod, to give us a rate or review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It helps us connect with the rest of the world's ex-Tumblr girls. Come, join, be our bestie, and we will see you next week. Bye.